Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Here comes the blues.
The blues.
Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
But here comes the blues.
A little dust.
It's us, so here comes the blues. And we will get to Dave very quickly. Dave, so stay on the line. I'll just read this first news item, and we're on to you. Deadlines are scary. And Microsoft has thrown Windows 7 users a big one. Update to a more modern operating system by January 15th, 2020, or you'll never receive security updates ever again. Eventually, Microsoft will even start disabling key Windows 7 services. Microsoft's abandonment of Windows 7 is a cause for concern for many. We've gotten a lot of panicky questions about it. But not upgrading isn't catastrophic. If you're still clinging to Windows 7, odds are good that you're using it to address a handful of simpler needs, sending email, browsing the web, etc. That, or perhaps you have a few specific applications that don't work with future versions of Windows, or you might even be running Windows 7 on old hardware that can't handle the upgrade for whatever reason. Windows 7 will keep working come January 15th. However, now that Microsoft won't be releasing any more security updates for it, Windows 7 will be much more vulnerable to attack. No question there. You can mitigate that somewhat by being incredibly diligent about updating your antivirus and anti-malware solutions, never going anywhere risky, never opening emails you aren't absolutely certain are from friends, backing up known clean files every single day at least once, and so on. But be honest, most of us won't do that. So it's either get off Windows 7 or risk it all. You may think you're not a target, but remember, viruses and drive-by malware are driven by programs. They're targeting everybody all the time at computer speeds. It's not if, it's when. Were I still using Windows 7, I'd go the nuclear option and install Linux on my system. And if I had to, run Windows 7 in a virtual machine that I verified is clean and created a clean snapshot of. Or jump to a Chromebook and leave all that nonsense behind. Of course, a more expensive but equally great option is a Mac. But if you absolutely must run Windows, aside from all the things I've already mentioned, make sure you're running a very new, very updated router. Make sure you're not running Windows as the administrator. Use Chrome. Google says they'll continue to support it on Windows 7 for another year and a half. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 7 is done. And your choices are, and I think I can't really do a Powers Booth impression. Well, bye. I'm off of it for good. I'm rolling the dice, baby. Windows, how quaint. And, of course, other. And if you picked other or you just have more to say about this, you can join us in the forums at our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussions is 11 January 20, Windows 7 is done. And of course you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or of course, if you're not in the 585 area code, like David definitely isn't, you can give us a call at 1-800-790-0415. And now we would like to talk to David, who apparently is calling all the way from Panama. Hi, David. What's up?
How you doing, guys?
We're great. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
How
I
are
got,
things? In
two things for you.
Yeah.
First, a tip, and then secondly, I've got a problem with a Chromebook.
Okay.
The tip. About 3 weeks ago, you were talking about buying cheap books, digital books on the internet.
Right.
There's an excellent site available by the name of BookBub, B-O-O-K-B-U-B. Sign up, put in the genres you're interested in, and every day get an email with 6 or 8 free or very low-priced books. Buy almost everything through there.
Yep, it's great. There's also free Booksy, freebooksy.com, which has limited but changing every day free books, mostly for the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but BookBub is a great it's a great site. What else you got?
Yeah, exactly. I love that. No. On to my Chromebook problem. I have an Acer that I bought refurbished about a year and a half ago. Three times now over the last 3 months, when I connect it to my Wi-Fi, it kills the whole Wi-Fi. I can't connect with my my tablet or my phone. Either the speed is terribly, terribly slow, or it just won't connect at all. Shut the Chromebook off, everything goes back to normal. Took me a while to figure that out. I thought originally it was an internet problem here. You guys talk about internet speeds, you'd laugh at what we get here. On a good day, I get about 2.7 down and about 0.6 up.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, one thing I would suggest you do off the top of my hat is in the Wi-Fi setup for the Chromebook, one of the things you can do is share your Wi-Fi connection.
Okay.
If that's turned on, it may be that the signal coming from your Chromebook is more powerful than the signal coming from your router and is swamping it.
Okay, how do you get to that?
Under settings, under network. Click on your Wi-Fi, whichever network it is, right?
Okay.
Then where is it? Under that is
mobile data. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't see.
Oh no, that's to share your phone's connection to your Chromebook.
Well, I thought I'd been through just about everything, and I haven't seen that. But the only way I've been able to fix the problem is to power wash the Chromebook.
Yeah, does mean it is some setting somewhere that's doing it, because when you power wash it, your settings go back to normal.
That's what I'm wondering about. But
yeah, it's clearly got something to do with that, but I'm going to have to research this. I know when I first set it up, it asked me if I wanted to share that connection. I said no.
Okay.
But now I don't find it in the settings anywhere, and I really should.
Yeah. I tried it on a neighbor's network, too, and the same thing when it's acting up. Kills the network.
Right. And I can understand that. But what I don't, because that makes sense. If it's swamping it,
And does the problem come back after you power wash it, or does it stay gone?
It's gone. Okay. It's been 3 or 4 weeks between it'll be normal, and then it'll act up. And when it acts up, there just isn't anything you can do. So everything I've tried, the only thing that works is to power wash it.
Oh, so it does. And the problem does come back.
It does come back, yes. This is the third time now.
It might be called tethering. It might be called hotspot.
It'll be fine for 3 or 4 weeks after you power wash it. That's been the history so far.
Right. I'm my first inclination is that that's what the issue is, that it's something to do with sharing your network. But
okay.
I don't know where that is off the top of my head, but I will look into that.
Okay. You'll post something, or?
Yeah, we'll post it on the Soundbites website.
Okay, and I will go and look and see what I can find also.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
No,
you guys have
you.
A great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.
Have fun down in Panama.
Yeah, how's the weather there anyways?
Oh, about 88, sunny. I'm going to go play golf in a little while here.
Okay, get the couch ready. I'll be down.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, you're right. All right, take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. Well, I wanted to get to Dave because he was, you know, in Panama. I want to go back to this window. What?
Well, I wonder if he was wearing a hat.
Hold on.
Got to wear Panama hats in Panama, right?
In Panama, exactly
except,
right.
Except Panama hats come from Ecuador.
Yeah, right. To get back to Windows 7, like I said, Windows 7 isn't going to stop working yet. Microsoft has said that they are, over time, going to disable Windows 7 features. So be prepared for that. Things will stop working if you're still using Windows 7. You can simply never connect to the internet,
which would be the safest thing to do anyway.
Well, the safest thing to do would be stop using it. But yes, second would be to never connect to the internet. Really, your choices become buy a new machine, assuming if your machine is a little too old to run Windows 10 well. And you need at least 4 gigs of RAM. You need at least a 1.2 gigahertz processor to run Windows at all competently. Windows 10. If your machine doesn't fit those needs, you have 3 choices. You can buy a brand new computer that does have Windows 10 on it and will run it. You can reformat your Windows 7 machine and put either Linux or Cloud Ready on it, which turns it into a Chromebook. Or you can buy a Chromebook. Or you can buy a Mac. So 4. Nobody expects Spanish Inquisition. But continuing to use Windows 7, if it is connected to the internet, is a very, very bad idea. Because like I said in the news itself, you may think you're not a target, but viruses and drive-by malware are programmed. Programs don't care who you are. They just want to own you.
And you may not think you have anything they want, but you have a computer, and they can use you for anonymity to attack somebody else.
Right.
And then when the police trace the signal, it comes to you, and you could get arrested for something.
And you have to prove that you aren't involved in child porn, or you have to prove that you didn't illegally download a movie or whatever. And proving a negative is very hard. So be aware that continuing to use Windows 7 is simply not a good idea. I would suggest you not do it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from North Chi-Lai, New York. Hi, Dennis, what's up?
Yeah, afternoon.
Afternoon.
Yeah, I've been trying to download the free Windows 10, and I keep getting a message saying the installation failed in the safe OS phase with error during first boot operation.
So the download worked okay then?
Apparently, yes.
And are you using the media creation tool to make a installer, or are you trying to install it?
No, I'm using a media creation tool from Microsoft.
Okay, and that step finishes properly?
Yes.
And then, then you boot that external media and get an error during the install.
Right, yeah.
How old is your machine?
It's about 3 years old. I've got a AMD A8-6410 APU processor with AMD Radeon R5 graphics, 2 gigahertz.
And how much RAM do you have?
I have 8 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm. You should certainly run it.
What version of Windows do you have now on the computer?
Windows 7 Professional.
32 or 64?
64.
Okay, and you downloaded the 64-bit installer?
Yeah.
All right. And you're...
Are you trying to upgrade or replace?
Oh, upgrade.
So you have to pick Windows 10 Pro during the upgrade process because it will only upgrade to the same edition you're running.
Well, it's not... I'm not sure if it offered that choice for Windows 10 Pro.
Yeah, it might not. That's what I'm. That's what I'm trying to look up. You may. I believe the home. The free.
When I download that ISO and go to install, it gives me choices of even Windows 10 N, Windows 10 S,
yeah,
Home, Pro, but you have to pick.
You have to pick the one.
So it comes with Home and Pro when you do your download. When you do your install, so the download, you just pick Windows 10. It comes with Home and Pro. Then you pick your language, so you picked English probably. Yeah. Then the 32-bit and 64-bit are separate, so you have to download the 64-bit version. And during the install, it asks you which version of Windows or which edition of Windows 10 you're installing, and it has to be the same edition that you're currently running. So with Windows 7 Pro, you have to install Windows 10 Pro.
Okay. What website was that you said you...
Microsoft. And downloaded the ISO.
You might want to post that, make sure he's downloading a legitimate...
Yeah, it's on last week's postings, too.
Okay.
And then you use the media creation tool to take that ISO and create an installer disk. Either flash drive or CD. Although flash drive is usually easier.
Oh, I have to do a disk or a flash drive?
Yeah, you use the media creation tool, and it takes that file you downloaded, which is only an ISO. It's basically a CD image, and turns it into a bootable, installable disk.
Oh.
So if you skip that step, there's your problem.
Okay, but I could use a flash drive?
Yes, you can use either a CD, well, a DVD.
DVD, yeah.
Or a flash drive that's at least, I think, 2 gig. Or 4 would be better.
8.
8?
Yeah.
Of course, it's a DVD.
It's a DVD, yeah.
Duh.
Well, DVD's only 4.7, so you need a dual-layer DVD.
Right.
Or an 8 gig flash drive.
So you need an 8 gig flash drive. Those are super cheap. And, of course, you can reformat it later and use it for other things.
Yeah, I've got a 64-gigabyte one.
Well, that certainly ought to work.
Yeah, okay.
And what you do is you run the media creation tool, and you point it at the file you downloaded, and then point it at your USB drive and let it do its business. And then you use that USB drive that you just created to do the update.
Yeah, you reboot your computer from that USB drive.
Right.
And I just posted a link on how to create that installation media, which then points you to the download site if you don't already have the download.
I'm at the download Windows 10 now.
And it's on Microsoft's site. You're downloading?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Because there have been a lot of place. There have been a lot of spam, email spam, ad spam, all kinds of spam, stuff in Twitter, Facebook, of course. Never believe anything in Facebook. That says, download Windows 10 for free, and then has a link, but those links don't actually go to Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
They're all fake, and they're all viruses and spam and everything else. So make sure you're on Microsoft's real site. If you're going to download something like that.
Right.
All right, so give that a try. If you skipped a step, it's like I always say when you're dancing the Security Tango, if you skip a step, you're not dancing anymore, you're just stumbling around.
Okay. All right, I'll give it a shot. Thank you.
All right, good luck.
Yep.
I would be a little worried the media creation tool is trying to put the installer on his hard drive and might mess up the boot blocks or... the Windows that's
well,
already
if you,
there.
If you didn't run it anyway, that didn't
happen. He's getting an error during the run, yeah. So make sure you have a good backup before you do any of this.
Yeah, of course.
So in case something goes wrong during the install, you can go back to the previous version.
Right. You must have a good backup.
All right.
Oops. I'm sorry.
We got five and somebody on the phone. You want to take
okay, it? Yeah, take them. Who is it?
Gary from Rochester.
You can say it right into the microphone if you like. Oh, Gary from Rochester. Okay. Back to the phones, our next caller. God, we're so professional here. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Hi, Gary, what's up?
Hi, I'll talk fast. I know you're getting ready for a break.
Yeah.
I've got three questions, and don't be afraid to cut me off. I'll hang on.
Bye-bye.
All right. The first one is, I have a Lenovo ThinkPad that's only 10 months old, and it runs great. It's running Windows 10 Professional, and I have Webroot as a virus, antivirus protection, and I get a notice almost daily from Lenovo, a pop-up that says Webroot isn't turned on, and then I go to settings in Windows 10, and it says it is. Have you ever heard of that?
What's probably happening is while Windows is booting, Webroot hasn't finished starting yet, so Windows is telling you it's not on.
Uh-huh.
And then you wait a few more minutes.
And it's up.
And by the time you get to the control panel, Webroot has finished turning on.
Okay. Boy, I'm glad that it's that simple. Here's another question. I have version 1903, and I got an update for 1909, which is a newer version. And stupidly, I didn't look, and I installed it. And I can uninstall that, can I? Just
you can you maybe. Can revert theoretically. You can revert back.
Oh, but do I automatically have version 1909? Or I wouldn't.
You
think
would.
So.
You would go into your add remove programs, whatever they renamed it now, programs and features in Windows 10, and find that KB update number. So you may have to look up what that was.
Yeah.
And uninstall it, and if it saved a snapshot of your previous system, it will uninstall the new update and go back to the previous one.
And if it hasn't, it should say cannot uninstall.
Yeah.
Okay, but then it would be all right to leave it, is that?
Yeah. Why would? Yeah. Updating is a good thing.
If everything's working, it should be fine.
It is. It is running a little slow, but that could be many other issues.
Right.
I mean, it could slower than usual. It, of course, when they're brand new, they run great, but this
right.
has slowed down, but I've got a lot of data on it, and my wife uses it, and there's a lot probably going on.
One
but
thing
fine,
I
I'll
might
leave them in.
Yeah, one thing I might suggest you do is run CCleaner.
All right.
And no. clean out your what's the program that cleans the registry?
You're talking about
Reg Cleaner,
yeah.
Yeah.
Reg Cleaner, okay.
That can be a little risky if it cleans something wrong. So, yeah, again, you want to make sure you have a good backup before you run it.
Okay. I know people have said the same thing about the first cleaner you mentioned, that it can really screw things up if you're not careful.
Yeah.
The last question is much more complex, and you may not
well, go for
handle it. But I run Thunderbird in as a email mailbox and like it very much. But I've noticed that that when I look at the outbox, things that I've or not the outbox, but sent messages, I notice that it's full of question marks and other asterisks and all sorts of clutter in it. And I know that's a question that Nick dealt with in his column some time ago. So you may want to refer me to something else rather than trying to walk me through this. Or maybe it's just too complex a question.
No, it's, well, not really. We're going to...
After the break.
Yeah, stay on the line.
I will.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gary from Rochester, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and this is Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Gary from Rochester, New York on the line. You still there, Gary?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right, so here's this deal. There is a thing called MIME, which stands for something mail,
Multi-purpose Internet Mail Extension.
Thank you. And it determines how things are seen in a folder, in an email message.
Right.
So what you need to do is in Thunderbird, go to the configuration editor, which is under tools, options, advanced. Are you writing this down?
I am. Tools, options, advanced.
General.
Okay.
Config editor.
Okay. Got it.
And scroll down until you see an entry called mail.strictly_mime.
Mail.strictly_mime.
MIME.
Yeah.
And click on it and change it from false to true.
Okay.
So what's happening is you have MIME messages, and it can't, in sent mail, it's having trouble figuring that out. So it's doesn't know what to do with half the stuff it sees.
Hmm. Okay.
And that's because people insist on sending web pages through the mail, not just text like mail was designed for.
Mail was designed for text.
7-bit text.
Seven.
Oh, I know.
But yeah, you should be able to do that. It should then. What happens is when you see it's when the sent mail folder sees that it is a MIME message, it will now know to treat it like a MIME message.
All right.
And that basically means show it in kind of a little mini web browser. So all the bits and pieces that it normally doesn't know what to do with get interpreted like a web page, and it should work.
Yeah, I think I followed that, but I've never sent web pages, so I won't worry about that.
That's just one possibility. It's also if someone sends you strictly. When you send email these days, you can send it as strictly text.
Yes.
Which is how mail was meant to be sent.
Right.
Or as HTML, which makes it a MIME message, or both. If your email system is configured to send as both, you won't see those question marks.
And a lot of times you don't make that choice knowing.
The other side does.
Well, you don't make it knowingly.
Right.
If you make a text message and make a message a word bold, you have now created a web page.
Yeah.
Because it has to send code to tell the other end to display this in bold.
I see. Yeah, I do that frequently.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what happens is when you look at your sent mail, it says, well, there's some codes here I don't understand. But if you tell it it's strictly MIME, then it'll say, oh, it's web page code. I can do this.
Okay. Well, I'll certainly try it. The directions sound complicated, but I've written it all down, and I'll certainly give it a try.
Yeah, well, it's mostly finding the right path into the strictly dot mail dot strictly underscore mime.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much. As usual, you guys are very helpful.
Well, thank you.
Good work.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye
bye. Bye.
Yeah, and I did talk about that at one point in my newsletter. I probably shouldn't mention that I do a newsletter now at AskNick.com.
Really? What do you do?
It's a newsletter. It's the old Q&A thing that was in the Gannett paper.
Mm-hmm.
And when Gannett bought or sold themselves to or merged with Gateway Media, I don't know which direction that all went. They
South.
Got rid of a lot of their freelance writers. I was one of them. So newspapers die, but information doesn't. And you can, if you want the newsletter, you can subscribe to it at AskNick.com. So that's where I had put that. And it's the same format, only it's better now. Because since it goes out as a newsletter, I can include, because I send it out as HTML code, I can include graphics and direct links. So you can click on a link rather than having to type it all in. Which sometimes was ridiculous to do, but you can now do that. So Give that a if you're interested in the newsletter, it's there. You can sign up.
Do you have reprint rights to your own articles?
I do.
Can you put them on your website?
I can.
Have you?
No.
Where is it on your list?
Actually, I have a database. I just haven't figured out how to make it properly searchable. The holy grail, of course, is to search it like Google searches it.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen.
So now it's improperly searchable.
It's now improperly searchable. So I'm working on that, and if you and how to make sure that only members can get at it. To be honest, so I have that on my list, and I'm still working through that. I haven't found an uncumbersome way to do that. I guess is the best way to put that. So we'll see. I mean, I can search it. I can create a search thing easily. But not an easily searchable, the way Google searches the web kind of search. You have to know exactly what you're looking for, type it in exactly right, yada, yada, yada. So,
sort of like pseudocode.
Well, yeah, and I've actually got tags and things like that, but still not enough stuff. So if you're interested in the column that never ran.
How many columns were there? Twenty-three years?
Yeah, 23 years. I can tell you. Actually, I can tell you exactly how many there were, not including the column that never ran. As a matter of fact, because I archive them all on Google Drive. So as soon as my Google Drive actually comes up, he vamped till ready.
Stalling for time. Yep.
And then I have to click on my drive. What I love is that in Google Drive, on the left is my drive, and if you open that up, you see everything in alphabetical order.
That is one thing, though, I got to admit, though. In the past, I'd say 6 to 8 months,
yeah,
I have gotten to where now even some of my stuff that I've had, you know, in Word and Excel spreadsheets, you know, saved on my hard drive, and I've turned around, pulled it back up, and imported it into Google Docs.
Yep.
Because there was one spreadsheet I had where I tracked a lot of different stuff, and I remember making some changes to it. And just 3-4 days ago, I go to go into it, and it's pulling up this, because I called it monthly expenses. And none of the changes are there.
Yep.
Matter of fact, it reverted back in 2018. And it's like, where the heck did the file go? And I even did a scan, you know, look for deleted files. I've got some software still that I can search. Can't find it. So it's like, that's it. And like I say, more and more of it, I'm just getting in the habit of, heck with this, redid it. And it took me about another hour to play around with it. Had to pull it back on up into my Google Docs, and I saved it there as a spreadsheet. That way I know, and it doesn't matter whether I'm here or wherever, just log into my Google
and
account.
And if your computer dies, you've still got it up there.
Yeah. Oh, I am religiously, even some other stuff, notes and all that other stuff. I've gotten in a lot better habit as I'm doing stuff, because getting older, CRS sets in.
Yeah.
So I sit there and I'll open up on my Chromebook. It's usually always a tab already open that if I want to quick jot something down, I'll pop it up there and I'll go back and refine it later. But it's just so handy just to have it right there at my fingertips and put it up there. And I know, you know, like later on, I can pull it up on my phone and look through it and read it. And, oh, yeah, I want to add this,
yep,
and this, and make notes to it. So, you know, it makes it a lot easier.
Yep. Counting the column that never ran, 1,214 columns.
Nice.
Not I've bad. Also thought about publishing ebooks per year.
Yeah, that'd be nice. You can go back and make sure you got the answer right, too.
Yeah, that'll happen. But I've thought about that. I just haven't done it, but I've thought about it. But those are that's actually kind of easy because
I actually found a new editor, an ebook. It is an editor, but really it's an ebook creator.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You write all your chapters in whatever, and then you compile them. That's an ebook compiler called Sigil, S-I-G-I-L. And it's a very cool thing. And it's pretty nice. And I seem to be there.
Multi-platform EPUB editor.
Yeah. All right. What the heck is going on here? I'm running too many things. This Chromebook is mildly underpowered for the amount of stuff I do on it.
It was a deal.
It was an extremely good deal. And, you know, when I've got Linux running and my Android update stuff and all the other things running and 15 tabs open, it's a tiny bit slow. But we're going to go back to the phone now and talk to our friend Al. I think you're from Rochester, New York, yes?
Hey, Nick.
Hi.
Penfield, but it's a Rochester zip.
Ah.
That works.
Whatever.
Hey, guys, I have a question for you. I've had a phenomenon for the last couple of months. It's gone from the annoying stage to now I'm getting seriously concerned. I have a old frontiernet.net email address.
Oh, yeah.
Account. And 5 times now in the last 2 months, I'll get a flag saying, due to abundance of security and caution, we're disabling your password. Please call us and we'll reset your password. I have no idea what's triggering it. I've got complex passwords, so I know no one's getting in, but I don't know whether this is a problem at my end or someone pounding on my email address and causing problems.
It's most likely coming from the other end. It's most likely someone pounding on your email address.
Since Frontier uses Yahoo as their back end, and Yahoo isn't known for the best security, it could be something happening at Yahoo, too.
Yeah, it may have nothing to do with you at all. That's why we're always telling people, go somewhere else, whether it's Google or Apple or Microsoft or somewhere else. But yeah, if you've got an old frontiernet.net address and you want to keep it, you're going to get these once in a while because, as Steve said, Yahoo is not good with security. They certainly, their filters stink, and they let stuff through all the time. So far, the best email provider I've seen for filters is Gmail. Yahoo filters really stink. And if you've been caught by somebody, if your email address is being hit by people sending you spam, eventually that will get flagged and you will have to change your password.
Or someone is sending out spam with your return address. That would also get you flagged, too.
Right. And there's honestly nothing you can do about that because they're just spoofing the address. They haven't broken into your account. They're just spoofing your address.
I always liken it to like sending a postcard. I can put anybody's return address I want on that.
Right.
It doesn't have to be mine. And then when the mail bounces because the address is wrong, it comes back to that other person. And again, a level of anonymity. So I don't get caught. I'm using someone else's address.
Right.
Well, now, backing up half a step, are you sure it's actually coming from Frontier?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. I was initially very concerned about that, but no, I've talked to Frontier's help desk a number of times.
Okay. Then, yeah, there's likely to be honest nothing you can do about that as such. But you may, want to think about closing out that email account.
There's always that one or two people that refuse to update their address books, and they still have your old account.
Well, and that's part of my problem. This account was back to 1986, probably.
Yeah.
So I've got, it's going to take a little bit of effort to get everyone switched over.
Yeah, one thing you can do is forward that email to another address. And in addition, set what they used to call an out-of-office message. It's an automatic reply that says, I am no longer using this address.
In big, bold letters.
In huge letters. From now on, use whatever your other address is. And add a date. As of such and so, I will be closing this account.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And it shouldn't take more than 2 or 3 years to get everybody moved over.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but, you know, give people a deadline. Anybody who cares about you is going to update their book, and anybody who doesn't isn't. And that's a great way to cull out the people who don't matter.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Didn't want to talk to you anyway.
Right.
You can't be bothered to change your address book. Okay. Oh. And then you get that annoyed phone call. I've been emailing you for weeks. Why haven't you answered me? Because you're using the wrong address.
Right.
Okay. Well, good advice, guys. Thank you. I just, like you say, it was initially just a little bit annoying, and now it's gotten to be every 2-3 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's likely that somebody's spoofing your address, your return address.
Okay.
And that'll just keep happening.
Yeah, I had a customer a couple of weeks ago where that happened to her. They were using her return address, and she was getting literally hundreds of bounced emails every hour coming back from undeliverable messages and also angry messages about take me off your mailing list.
Right.
You're not on my mailing list.
Right.
No. Well, yep. Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks.
Joy.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and almost the only thing you can do is change your email address until the bad guys get that new address.
Right.
So once again, the bad guys are screwing it up for normal people. You can't give people your email address because the bad guys get it.
Right. Right, because all it takes, if you post it on a website, of course it's owned. If you give it to somebody else and they're compromised, one of the first things that people steal is the address book. So, particularly if you're using Yahoo, again, because their security is horrifyingly bad.
They lost all 3 billion user accounts a couple years ago.
Yeah. And not only the accounts, but also all those people's address books. So if you were in one of those address books, any one of 3 billion address books, what are the odds? You will find that you are... in somebody's list as a possible address to steal.
And you can check to see if your address has been lost by going to haveibeenpwned.com. That will, you type in your address and it tells you where your address was leaked and by who. You can even sign up to get notified if your email address gets leaked again. Because a lot of times what will happen messages will end up in a combined list. What was the one? They call it the best spam list. And yeah. Then, you know, a couple of months later, someone made another best spam list, and it had 100 million new addresses versus the last spam list.
Right.
Or one of the big ones was in LinkedIn. In 2012, LinkedIn got hacked and lost 164 million addresses and passwords. And then 4 years later, that database showed up on the dark web for sale. And so people still hadn't changed their password after 4 years.
And that reminds us, never reuse a password.
Yep.
If you use a password on LinkedIn, they've got it. So your best bet is to always use unique passwords on every one of your sites. And don't tell me you're too stupid to think up new passwords, because you're not. And if you use a password manager like EnPass or LastPass, or any one of those, they'll even generate passwords for you. Very yep. secure passwords.
In September 2019, Zynga got hit, and they make Words with Friends, among many other very popular games. 173 million unique addresses and passwords got lost.
Yep.
So if you play Words with Friends, your email address and password have been lost.
Or any one of the Zynga games, are a million of them.
Yep.
So you want to be very careful exactly what it is you use for an address and what you use for a password. Make sure you don't use the same one anywhere.
They're up to 9 billion pwned accounts.
Yeah, 9 billion. Think yours is in there somewhere?
More than there are people on Earth.
Yep.
So, yeah, you're in there. Trust me. Trust me.
You're in there.
I'm definitely in there at least three or four times. I know this. I don't see much spam because a good number of my accounts are through Gmail. My domain is Gmail. My other address is a Gmail address. So I have very, very good filters through Gmail, but I have some other accounts that don't use Gmail, and they are just direct accounts, and I get spamming them all the time. And I have done some filtering, but you know there's a new filter all the time, and you can sign up for filter lists. If, for example, you use Thunderbird, you can add some lists to that, check for spam, and a couple of other email programs will let you do that. And there are a number of spam lists that are out there, and you should definitely worry about that. And if you are using, what many people do is create a weird email address on Gmail or whatever, any of the free places,
yeah,
and give that only to friends and use it for nothing else.
And then make another address you use when you have to sign up for some list to, you know, to read in a forum or to buy something on this one website you'll probably never go back to again.
Right. I have any number of websites. I have dozens of websites for various things, and I have an account on one of those websites that I use for all of that. And I finally had to change it to say delete emails every 2 hours, because it was just I set it for unlimited email, but I was getting tens of thousands of them. Yep. Because they sell lists of each other and start sending things.
I always get a kick at when the bad guys break into other bad guys to get their list.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to buying them, because that would cost them money.
Yeah.
But yeah, be very careful where your email address is going, and make sure that you're using unique passwords for everything, because if they get one and then they get more than one, you know, if you've used the same password for Facebook and your bank, that's a real problem. And you need to be very, very careful of that. So be aware and be both aware and wary.
Yeah, especially accounts that have money behind them. You know, Amazon, PayPal, your bank. You want to have an extra good password.
Right. And I always run mine through, I have NPass. And so NPass will tell me if a password is weak or yep. fair or good. And I want to see very good for passwords for like Facebook and all of that. So
I heard there was a story on Security Now where someone said they don't even bother writing down their passwords or remembering any passwords. Whenever they go back to a site, they say, "I forgot."
And they get emailed.
They get emailed the link, and they just use the link, and it says, "Generate a new password." They just bang on the keys. They don't care.
Yeah, right.
Because the next time they want to log in, they say, "I forgot." And all so right. The bad guy can say, "I forgot," and get your password, too.
That's exactly right. All right, we're done for this hour. Don't go away, though. We've got a whole nother hour of this nonsense coming up. You can give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. That works all over the world, including Panama. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, as unappetizing as that sounds. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter @901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you've been listening to at least a minute already.
Keep your eye on that mic, Dave.
Second hour of
sound bites. No.
Actually, keep your eye on the button. The mic will take care of itself.
Yeah. Right? No, Mike. Nick's mic seems... Your mic is fine. It's his mic.
It's me. I'm loud.
I'll move your mic back a little farther.
But...
No,
Rob told me to be right in here on the mic.
And that's the way he set it up, but the thing keeps jumping around.
It's because I'm sometimes soft and sometimes very loud. I can't help it. I'm emotional.
You're Italian.
I'm Italian and I'm an actor. I'm an actor, damn it, not a movie star. Oh, no, I'm a movie star, not an actor. Jeez and crackers, how do I not know that line? I'm not an actor, I'm a movie star. All right, here's some news.
There's no small parts, only small actors?
Yes. The best movie ever, My Favorite Year. If you haven't seen it, you really, really should. Okay, for those of you who use Firefox, the excitement over Mozilla's release of Firefox 72 this week was somewhat dampened by the fact that it necessitated a patch immediately for a zero-day vulnerability in the browser. Thanks to its new four-week release cycle, Firefox 72 arrived with a few newer features than some previous releases, but it did lessen permission spam and included many new developer features. And if you're using Mac OS or Linux, Firefox 72 included the picture-in-picture functionality for videos that debuted with the previous release on Windows. Unfortunately, Firefox 72 also necessitated a patch for a zero-day flaw in the browser that is currently being actively exploited by hackers, so users are warned to upgrade again as soon as possible. We are aware of targeted attacks in the wild abusing this flaw, Microsoft security advisor admits. The flaw is present in at least several versions of Firefox, but Mozilla isn't providing that information. Mozilla has released security updates to address a vulnerability in Firefox. A U.S. Department of Homeland Security warning explains. An attacker could exploit this vulnerability to take control of an affected system. Make sure you're running 72.0.1. Go to your browser's, your Firefox browser's menu bar and click About Firefox. A new window will open and it will automatically begin to check for any updates, downloading them automatically. And once the download is complete, click the restart to update Firefox if you are not already using version 72.0.1.
And then do it again to make sure it gets you all the way up, because I just had to do it three times.
Yeah, you sometimes have to do it more than once. So are you running Firefox? Which version? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like our friend Bodan did from right here in Rochester, New York. What's up, Bodan?
Hey, gentlemen, good afternoon to you. And I've got a question in regards to a Microsoft update. Apparently in the fall, there was a feature update for Windows 10 called version 19.09. Just want to see if any of you gentlemen have downloaded it to a PC, and what's your take on it? Is this the greatest thing since sliced bread for Microsoft, or is it still in the beta format and people should hold off?
Both.
Hey, both.
Some people had no problems, and some people had lots of problems.
Lots of problems.
Any of you guys running 1909?
No.
None of us are running Windows.
No, none of us are running Windows anymore. You know, Dave does.
Occasionally.
Yeah, on the wife's machine. Yeah.
Here's the thing.
You don't love her very much, do you?
Yeah, right.
Inflicting Windows on her.
Came with it, and that's what she's used to. Yeah. So
that's how it works. My wife's machine runs Windows 10 as well. Here's the thing about any update for Windows. It depends, which is my favorite answer. It depends on what hardware you have in your machine and what software you have in your machine. Every machine is different, and Microsoft stopped checking various different configurations of hardware. They've simply stopped doing it. So you are the beta tester. And my suggestion has always... Okay, let me go back a bit. 1909 means it came out in September of 2019. How their new numbering scheme works. It's the scheme that Linux has been using for decades. And Microsoft finally gave up on Windows 10, 10.1, 1152. But
they changed that because this year it would have been 2003.
Right.
They already have a Windows 2003.
Right.
So they're renaming it.
Right.
That would
confuse
too many
people. Well, I can give you something, in a nutshell, I'll give you really quick. I have an Intel Core processor i5 with a 3.2 gigahertz. Installed RAM, 8 gigabytes, 64-bit operating system. That's, it's a couple years old, Dell computer.
Dell? What Dell? Dell has multiple lines.
Inspiron 3847.
Yeah, Inspiron is their budget experimental
budget line
version. And that means that it may have components that are not mainstream, to put it as politely as possible.
Okay.
So you may find that there is an issue. It is unlikely, but you may find an issue. The fact is you've already updated it to it and it's still running, so you should be okay.
You may want to go to the Dell website.
I have not updated it to 1909. I've held off.
Oh.
So, and my machine does run smooth now. So my question is, why give myself a problem? I just wanted to see if you guys have installed it or know other people that have downloaded 1909. Were there any many issues or does it go in smoothly?
There's no universal yes or no here.
Got it.
It is strictly by machine. And so in many ways, you're playing craps. Roll the dice and hope baby gets new shoes.
Well, I guess then, for my particular sake, unless I have to, I'm going to hold off on it. I mean, my machine is knock on wood, running smoothly, and I have no major issues with it. I dance the tango monthly, and that's about it.
Yeah, it doesn't look like I'm going through the list of new features, and there isn't much new for the end user other than the typical security and stability improvements, which is almost an oxymoron.
However, there is a list, and Steve will link it, of the Dell computers that were tested for Windows 10 November 2019 update and previous versions of Windows 10.
And where will I find that? A Soundbites website?
Yeah, he'll have it up in about 5 minutes, 2 minutes.
But Soundbites?
Yeah, it's the Soundbites website, yes. We'll put a link there in an article.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, and if you go to the Dell website and put in your asset tag, then it will take you right to the updates available for your specific computer.
And you may find that there are some drivers that specifically need to be updated for 1909.
Okay, that's good to know. All right, so go to Dell's website and see if there's any drivers. And then, if I wanted to, I would download 1909. But I think, guys, for now, I'm not going to do it.
No, I not yet, but check that out. And if you do decide to do it, download the drivers first and put them on a flash drive. Because one of the drivers will be for networking. And if networking stops working, you better have those drivers already downloaded.
Got it, 10-4.
Yep, okay.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy.
Excite me, you too.
Bye-bye.
And in Microsoft's product life cycle, they do show that Windows 1909 will end its life May 11th, 2021.
So a year and a half.
Year and a half, because the new 2020 H1, for the first half of 2020, why didn't they just name it that, is currently under development for release. And that will be the next version, then the next version, then the next version. So it's okay to not upgrade, especially if there are problems. But eventually, you should, as you get too far behind. You usually don't want to be more than one or two versions behind the main release, because there's always some weird thing that might be happening. You may not know you have that problem until you install the update and it fixes it.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from North Chi-Line, New York. Hi, Dennis. What's up?
Yeah, I'm back again.
Yeah.
I was on the Windows 10 media creation tool.
Yeah.
And it only offers, it just says plain Windows 10. There's no professional. There's no home. It just is.
Yeah, during the install, it will ask you which edition of Windows you're installing.
Not the download and creation of the tool. After that, when you reboot.
Oh, that's after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when you do the reboot and you boot from that flash drive, one of the choices at that point as it's booting up will be which version do you want to install. And you must match to what you have.
Right.
Yeah, you can downgrade, I think, but you can't upgrade.
Gotcha. Okay, and you said you were going to post something on your Soundbites web. I can't find your website for Soundbites.
Soundbites.org. That's bytes with a Y.
Right, okay. Soundbites.org.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there was instructions to create your media Windows installation.
It's now down a ways. We've added some things since then. But it's still on the first page. It's the third column down on the left.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
There you go. Good luck.
Yep. Goodbye.
Yeah, we do try to post things. Steve is doing an amazing job of posting things as we go along. And but it takes a minute for them to get there. And, of course, you have to refresh.
Refresh.
In order to see it. But, yeah. But, yeah, it's a you really want to be fairly up to date. Don't you know, we've said this for many years, don't be first. But that was 1909. And if you're going to do an update, always check the website of your manufacturer.
That's one of the advantages of buying from a major manufacturer, because they maintain these lists and drivers for the new OSs.
Right. If you do you have an itch? Is that what?
No, the clock was off in the system.
Yeah.
So that was driving. So everybody was going bananas because what clock do I use? What clock do I use? And, well, so I just went into Windows and reset the time.
Are we closer to being done, or are we farther from being done?
Yeah, right.
Well, there was a 4 minute discrepancy.
Between, 4 minutes is forever in radio.
Yeah, and especially when you're trying to look at the board, what time that says versus what the computer said.
Right.
They were 4 minutes off, so Ray and the other folks this morning were totally losing it, wondering, "Oh, do I go by this clock or that clock?"
You think they'd all be set to synchronize with the time server?
Well, they should be.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it probably is. The board syncs with the FCC time server, and the computer syncs with the NIST time server.
Yeah. Right. Well, somehow or another, one of them got the computer got knocked off by 4 minutes, so I found where he had it buried, and I just went in there and
fixed it.
Reset it.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank Al, and Al, you know what I'm thanking you for, so thank you very much. We do want to remind you, if you're going to do an update, back up first. You should be backing up every day.
Yeah,
and
I mean, you should,
it's easy enough to do. But you also need to make sure that you have a current backup before you update. So that would be an extra backup. Yes, it takes time.
But see,
it's less time than recreating every document you've ever made.
The basic thing, what I usually always told folks is, don't worry about backing up the Windows folders and all that other stuff. That stuff, you're going to have to redo anyways. If your machine gets corrupt, say I got to put it in a new hard drive, you're going to have to reload Windows fresh anyways. The key thing you want to back up, and this won't really take that long compared to backing up the whole system, is go to your user file and just save your photos and your documents and anything else like spreadsheets or that type of stuff. Anything that you created, I always tell folks, put it on a separate drive. You know, then that way, you can partition the drives. So you get your C drive. Granted, it is still just one physical drive. But you could sit there and point everything. Say you create a partition called D.
Right.
And you point all your programs, Microsoft and the rest of them, to save everything to D. Along with photos, everything else. Now all I have to do is, in my backup routine, say backup D.
And if you
D will then save you know, copy everything to wherever you're going to put it.
That's right.
And if you don't do it with multiple partitions like that, you just need to back up your user folder that has all your stuff in it. And then go back every now and then and look at your backup drive and make sure it's working. Make sure the dates are up to date. Make sure the things are there. Had a customer this week brought a computer in, and from his symptoms, it sounded like his hard drive died. And he said, "So what? You know, what about the files on the disk?" I said, "They're probably gone."
Yeah.
And this look of fear went across his face. And I said, "You know, do you have a backup?" And he said, "Yeah, I do, but I don't know if it works. I don't know when. I bought a backup drive. Did you plug it into the computer? We've had that before. I bought a backup drive. Did you plug it into the computer and tell it to back up? Oh, I have to do that?
Yeah.
The backup drive box is still sealed. But yeah, go back into your backup. Make sure it's working every now and then before your drive fails. Your drive is going to fail. You will lose your drive.
Yes, you will. That is a given.
Yep.
It's not if, it's when. And one of the things that you can do, if you're using Carbonite, for example, and things are backed up, you should still check it. If you're using pCloud or one of those, you should still check it. I have pCloud. I have a half a terabyte of lifetime storage up there. And every once in a while, I go there and look at a file.
Well, I can't reach the cloud.
I can reach the cloud. I'm running Linux.
Wait a minute. He does, too, reach the clouds. His planes do all the time with his rockets.
That's right.
Yep.
He's more in the clouds than we are.
That's right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, I'm trying to load Clonezilla so I can create a clone of my hard drive. And when I go to the Clonezilla site, I thought I'm supposed to be downloading an ISO file, and I'm not sure if I'm seeing it there.
ISO.
Yeah.
Yeah, an ISO file, yeah.
They have their stable, alternate stable testing. It's nice that especially in the open source community, they have all these cool projects, but sometimes I just want a big button that says download.
Yeah.
You want it too easy.
Here's what you do. You go to the Clonezilla site.
Yeah.
At clonezilla.org. Hold on, let me lead you there.
Yeah, and then they have a subfolder they're called liveusb.php.
Right. On the left, in the green box, you'll see livecd/USB. You click on that, and it takes you to clonezilla-live.php.
And then you have a bunch of lists. You hit the download button because this image or screen tells you to go to the download button. Then the rest of the instructions.
So I should use the one that says for USB flash drive, right? Isn't that what I should be doing? Because I want to create a bootable flash drive.
Hold on.
Yeah.
If you're on that page, you're in section 2, how to install Clonezilla Live.
Yes, I see it.
The first bullet point. It has a link to download the ISO.
For CD or DVD.
Right. But then you go down to the second one, and it says, check this doc.
Right.
And that's just a document on how to properly use the download to do the thing you need to do. In fact, if you go there and you want to do it, if you're running Windows... there's multiple links.
I see that. I see this thing called Tux Boot and manual and all that stuff.
So they actually just lead you down the page, and if you want to use Tux Boot, you download that and then follow the instructions.
How do I know which one I want to use?
Well, right.
Yeah.
If you want to do it manually, then you just download the zip file and do that. I would do the manual one because I don't know what any of these other programs are.
Okay, so I got that zip file. What do you do with that zip file? Do you unpack it in your download folder, or do you move it over to your USB drive and unpack it there?
Well, it says in step 3, extract all the contents of the zip file to the either FAT16, FAT32, or NTFS partition of your USB flash drive.
Right.
So you move it over there, but keep the entire architecture exactly the same as you were.
Yeah.
Then step 4, you have to be an administrator, and it tells you how to do that.
Yeah.
and you run run as administrator on the makeboot.bat file, and then follow those on-screen instructions, and then you're ready to go.
Okay, that makeboot.bat file, that's one of the files that's unpacked from the zip file.
Right.
Okay. You know, it sounds straightforward enough, but it really should be even more straightforward.
Well, unfortunately, the only way to make it a little more straightforward would be, I suppose they could write a thing that would...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't quite know how they do it, but they could do it. Or they could sell you a flash drive, I guess. But the point is, it's actually only about 5 steps.
Yeah.
So it's not terribly difficult.
But there's 10 different ways to do those 5 steps, and they give you too many choices.
Right.
Too many choices.
But if you're doing the manual one, or if you're doing Tux Boot, I mean, honestly...
I've used Rufus.
Rufus is one. Linux Live or Rufus or Tux Boot is actually a little bit easier. Because if you download Tux Boot, you just boot it and follow the instructions in the GUI 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. But even one of the selections is this thing called Unbooten, and then it says it's not recommended.
Yeah, don't use Unetbooten.
If it's not recommended, why would they put it in there?
Because on some business systems, that is the only way to do it.
Okay.
It is not recommended for anybody who isn't a systems administrator. And understands the ins and outs of Unetbooten. But it is certainly a way to do it. And if you know what you're doing, you can create... if you know what you're doing, it's easy. And if you have the right tools and you're on the right kind of network and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
But as an individual, no, don't use it.
And one of the options is the Linux Live USB Creator. If you use that, you can still use it on a Windows machine, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But I would suggest either Rufus or Tux Boot.
Okay.
Tux Boot, in fact, is a Linux thing as well.
Yeah.
Tux is the Linux mascot.
Okay, I'll give one of those a try. Thank you.
Yeah.
There are also a couple of commercial cloning programs where you buy a box and basically you boot it and it says, what do you want to clone from and what do you want to clone to? But you're paying for that ease of use.
Right, and ease of use is not a bad thing,
but
you are paying for it.
So Kronos is $50. Clonezilla is free, but takes a little more to set up. EaseUS is $30 to do it once, or $40 to back up workstation rather than home.
Right.
So there are a few different ones. Paragon Drive Copy. So it used to be Norton Ghost was the big one.
And
Symantec bought Norton and killed the product.
Right. If you want to see what's available, asknick.com/backup.php. We'll talk about backing up. And it'll show you the various operating systems, Linux, Windows.
Well, yeah.
Linux?
Because Windows is adding the Linux kernel next version, isn't it?
It is.
So it will be Linux. And then on Linux, you can run Windows and Wine. So there's Windows. Yeah.
So it's it shows you all the operating systems, Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, iOS, a little bit of everything. All right. Apparently, that music is telling me that we're going to take a quick break. But don't go away. We've got a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. We'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are indeed Soundbites, and this is indeed Jazz 90.1. Dramatic pause.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after, did you say 63 degrees?
Yes, sir.
63 degrees.
Yes, sir.
In January.
Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. Kelvins would be bad.
Kelvins would be very bad.
Well, if you want it, in, you know, what is it in
Celsius?
18 Celsius.
We don't do Celsius here. We do Freedom Height. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hi, how you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I am a VM ignorant person. I have no idea how it works, but I did see it on a computer once, and I was wondering how you got the different operating systems to work on it, whether you had to purchase a license to run Windows on it, or how does it work, and is there some place I can look to see, you know, gain knowledge as a novice?
Sure. VM stands for virtual machine, and what it does is if you have enough oomph in your computer, and that's both processor and RAM, you can run a second operating system essentially inside a window, inside a virtual machine, inside your regular machine. So what that requires is a virtual server, sort of. I, for example, use a program called VirtualBox. And when you open that up, it's basically just a blank thing. And inside there, I say I want a new virtual machine. I tell it how many processors I want, how much RAM I want, how big a hard drive I want. And of course, all of that is based on how much my real machine has.
So you're splitting your real machine into multiple virtual machines.
Right. So, for example, I've got a 16 gig machine at home. Well, no, let's use my laptop. It's an 8 gig machine. I certainly don't want to create a virtual machine with more than 4 gigs because that would take 4 gigs away from my real machine.
Okay.
Right. So, and my laptop, I've got a quad processor. So I've got 4 processors. So I don't want to give the virtual machine more than 2 because that's half the number I got. Okay. So you create a machine and say, I want to give it 2 processors and 4 gig of RAM. You then say, here's the operating system I want to run, Linux, Windows. Those really basic your 2 choices, pretty much.
You can run Mac if you want. It's usually the other way around. You start on the Mac and run something else.
Right. But then you end up with a little virtual machine. Before you start it up, you tell it, I don't need a floppy drive, but I do need an optical drive. And then you point that optical drive at the ISO you downloaded. So let's say you wanted to load Linux, right? So you download, say, Ubuntu, and it's an ISO. Then in the virtual machine, before you start it up, this is still in VirtualBox itself, you go into the storage button and you say, okay, I want to, essentially you're loading the CD into the virtual machine.
Okay.
You point it at that file. Then you start it up and it works like a regular computer. It starts up, it sees that its hard drive has nothing on it, but it sees that it has a quote unquote CD drive, and in that CD drive is the Live Linux CD, so it boots that instead. Now you can either run it from that or you can install it on your quote unquote hard drive.
Okay.
And once you've installed it, you reboot and it's there. And from then on, you can run it, you can start it, you can stop it, you can, you know, log out, turn it off. And anytime you want to run it again, you open up VirtualBox and then double click on that Linux instance and up it comes.
And there are several VM programs. VirtualBox is from Sun, and it's free, but that means you don't get any tech support. There are commercial programs, VMware and Parallels. And then you pay them for tech support as well. With VirtualBox, you post in the forums and or ask us, and we help. And so that gives you the virtual machine, which is often called, you run that on your computer as the host operating system. And then the guest operating system you want to run, yes, you do need a license for that. Fortunately, Linux, the licenses are free. Windows, you would have to pay for a license, or Mac, you would have to pay for a license, because those are commercial operating systems.
Okay.
Which is why it often works the other way. You're on Windows and you want to run a Linux program, so you install a Linux VM. Or you're on Mac and want to run a Windows program, you install a Mac VM.
Right. One of the things that I use it for is to test new Linux distributions, see if I like them better than Xubuntu, which so far I like better.
Which is easier to run in a virtual machine than it is to erase your computer and start from scratch with this new thing you may not like after all.
Right. Mm. Now they will run generally a little slower. Depending on what graphics card you have, you may not get some fancy dancy features of the graphics card. But in general, you will be able to run everything.
Great. Okay. Well, that answers my question in a thumbnail.
Yeah. Basically, I recommend if you're interested in abandoning Windows and going to Linux, the best thing to do is to set it up in a VM and play with it for a while. Or if you've got an old machine, put it on that.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the help.
Thank you.
And have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And I posted a link from Beginner Geek on how to use virtual machines. It's a little dated, but it is still pretty accurate. It's the same three VM programs have been out forever, and it talks a lot about Windows 7 rather than Windows 10, but the concept is the same.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Just wanted to let you know there is a website called distrotest.net. And on that website, you can test out over 100 Linux distros without having to try to figure out how to use VMware.
Ooh.
You just go to the website and click on the distro you want to try, and it opens it up in a virtual machine for you, and you're all set to go and try it.
Oh, how cool is that? But it's via the web, so it's whatever. Yeah. Yeah, that's very cool.
But for people, VMware is not that easy to set up. VirtualBox is a little tricky, but this one, you just go to a web page.
Very nice.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Okay, thank you for all the years you've helped us.
Thank you for this. This is great. That's my afternoon sorted. thank you. this is my favorite part of this show. So when the users call up and tell us, the listeners call up and tell us something, I love that part. So thank you. Thank you, Bill. That's great. Distrotest.net. Very nice. You've got a fast enough connection. That should be pretty easy to use. Is it Gray or Gary?
Gary, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm trying to write fast.
Go ahead.
I hadn't heard of most of these versions of Linux.
Our next caller is Gary from Shiloh, New York. What's up, Gary?
How are you doing, guys? You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Got a quick question. I upgraded to Windows 10.
Yep.
But I'm looking for a nice antivirus because the essentials are not there for the Windows 10.
Right.
What do you recommend?
I still like Avast.
Avast is nice.
Avast and AVG, one bought the other, and I forget which way it went. They just got into trouble recently. Their URL scanning software that was supposed to warn you about going to malicious websites, turned out it was scanning everything you were doing and sending it back to the home instead of just the URL. But Windows Defender, built into Windows 10, is probably enough.
For most people.
Enough for most people. And it's built into Windows. One of the problems with third-party AV is it always has to hook itself into the OS at the kernel level, and that can frequently cause compatibility problems when you load other software in.
But if you're looking for a comprehensive setup that
checks everything. Go to securitytango.com.
Okay.
Securitytango.com.
I did download that. I did a little research. I did download that Total AV.
Yeah.
You guys, is that it? I mean, I got the free version. Yeah. Now, is the Windows the Defender, is that free?
Windows yes. Defender is, in fact, built into
Windows 10.
Windows.
So it's free.
Yeah,
it comes included with your Windows license.
How often it gets updated? I don't know. Yeah.
Theoretically, regularly.
At least once a month.
Yeah.
With the monthly updates.
But you should be running an antivirus program and an anti-malware program.
Definitely, both, you know. And on the anti-malware, we always suggest two because one isn't enough. One doesn't scan. One goes deep, one goes wide.
Right. It's Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware. Both of those are listed on the Security Tango site under Windows Software Anti-Malware.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. Have a splendid day.
You too. Keep smiling. It's important to make sure your system is protected. And that gets harder and harder as the bad guys get better and better at what they're doing.
Well, like we've always said for decades, it's a game of leapfrog.
Yep.
You know, they try to hack. They put up a patch. They find a workaround from that patch, and then they got to patch that patch. And it just goes on and on. And that's the way it's been for, like I say, decades.
Yep.
Literally, right back to the days of when viruses were the big scare.
Yep.
Now it's more of, because you don't hear the terrorists, downing a bunch of machines. No. What they're trying to do is they want to keep them up and running. They want to get in there. They found out, well, that didn't get us much much gain there. They just want to now get into the machines and see what personal information they can steal from you.
And
they can derive a lot more money.
And one of the big payloads these days is cryptojacking. So they install a crypto miner, like a Bitcoin miner, in your computer to use your computer to make them money. So that could be a reason your computer got really slow because you have a crypto miner. Or ransomware, because people are paying ransoms. The insurance companies now have started offering ransomware insurance where they pay the ransom. So they're incenting more ransomware by paying that ransom.
Right.
The best defense for ransomware is a backup. So just wipe your infected computer and restore from backup. Don't worry about paying the ransom and hoping the bad guy then sends you the keys to unlock your files.
And make sure that backup is not online.
Right.
Because that can be a problem, too. So be aware of all of that stuff. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hi, guys. I have a problem with my Chromebook, where I'm using RoboForm to log into sites, and I think that possibly I've allowed Google to record my login that's different from what I'm trying to log in from RoboForm. How do I get rid of what's gone under the auto login in Google?
Oh, yeah.
You go into settings and then passwords, then saved logins. And you can see what they are and delete them.
Settings, password, save login.
Yep.
Great. That's all I needed to know. Good. Thanks, guys.
And if you're not using RoboForm, which is a form filler outer, which is cool, all the major browsers, including Chrome, have form fill out built in where it will remember usernames and passwords for you. We heard an interesting case a few weeks ago where you can sync your data between your Chrome devices, on your devices. And someone had gotten his Google account hacked. And so the bad guy logged into Chrome on the bad guy's browser and downloaded all the good guy's passwords because it synced to the new computer it thought was him. So turn on two-factor, make sure you've got a good password on your email. Yeah, we talked earlier about having a good password on accounts with money behind them. You need a really good password on your email also because that's all your forgot stuff or your password reset messages. So a bad guy can go to Amazon and say, forgot my password, and Amazon will email you, And if the bad guy is in your email, he can reset your password and get all your Amazon money.
Right. So be careful of that. There's a way to manage your passwords that Chromebook will tell you about. Steve can. Oh, he's on it. He's good.
He's had time.
He's gonna. excuse me. He's gonna post that.
And it's slightly different whether you're on your computer, an Android device, or an iOS device.
Right, but all of those are available there. So if you're on your computer, which is really, it's Chrome, the Chrome operating system is basically what a Chromebook runs. It's the Chrome OS, but it's also the Chrome browser. So removing them, you would be removing them, in fact, from the Chrome browser, which is why it just says computer, not specifically a Chromebook. The way to do it is the same whether you're on any device that runs the Chrome browser. So that's how you do it. So it's fairly easy to do once you know what the path is and how to get to it. And so it's something you should definitely do. Be aware that in fact you have the ability to save passwords in any browser, and that file where they are saved is a target for anybody who's broken into your machine. So if you do indeed save those, you've got an issue, frankly. They are password protected, but not tremendously so. A program like RoboForm or whatever does a better job of that. And pass.
There actually was a bug reported to Google that you can see your password list in Chrome without putting a password in.
Yes.
And Google's answer is, well, yeah, you should have a password on your computer.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you're already logged into your computer and get up and walk away, someone can sit down at your computer and look up all your passwords.
Yeah. Yeah. Never walk away from your computer.
So both Firefox and Safari have a second level where you need to type in your computer password again to see your saved passwords, right, just in case it's not you sitting at the computer.
Right. And people are annoyed all the time. I get calls all the time. It's asking for a password again. How do I make it stop? You don't.
You want
That's a feature, not a bug.
It's protecting you.
It's
hello?
Just your password.
Yeah.
It's not asking for a tap dance and for you to recite Othello. Entire play. Well, it just wants your password.
No, nobody wants anything in my computer.
Yes, they do.
But
yes,
the thing of it is, though, until they actually get hacked
one time,
then until then, it's a nuisance. Then if they ever got hacked or a bank account got compromised, they would all of a sudden, oh, yes, I got to do this.
I'll tell you what, one of my students, let me tell you the story. One of my students... I used to teach security at RIT. And one of my students came to me one time. He said, I took your security class. Said, I know. He said, I honestly thought you were full of it. Because it just...
Well, we know you are, but...
Well, yeah. And I said, yeah, but why specifically? But he said, because you made it sound like people are trying to break into my system all the time, and then it's really easy to do. And then I became a security major.
Yeah.
And I realized you kind of downplayed it.
They are trying to break into your computer all the time, and it is pretty easy.
Yeah, it is pretty easy.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you are as secure as you can be. It used to be you just had to run your machine. Now you have to be a systems administrator, and most of us are unprepared to be that.
And they don't want to be that. They don't want to have to remember so many passwords.
Right.
But it's almost gotten to be blasé now. Your credit card gets hacked. They send you another one. No big deal.
Yeah.
Your account password gets hacked. They'd make you reset it. No big deal. Another company just breached 100 million addresses. No big deal.
No big deal. Yeah.
Atlanta got shut down to a ransomware hack. No big deal.
No big deal. We don't care.
Yeah. And it's in fact, on security now, they stopped talking about and stopped reporting on all the hacks and breaches because there's so many of them. It's like every week there's two or three more. So they're trying to focus more on the trends and the issues rather than, yeah, there's another breach.
Yep. All right. That music tells us we are done.
for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank the people who called in and gave us other solutions. I love that. Thank you all. Thanks to Dave calling in from Panama. Panama?
Yeah.
Good for him. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Listen, don't go away. There's a lot of good German music coming up, and we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are and can continue to be with your generous support, member supported. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?